next time you stop buying your underwear.
Alan Sunil's store 15 to 20 million.
What about me?
I am your
leader. You have the power.
Isn't it about time for a change?
Where are national leaders?
AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. As we get together on this Wednesday, April the 3rd, we certainly have a lot of news and information to share with you. I hope that you're enjoying the spring season. I hope that you had an enjoyable April Fool's Day. And as always, I ask that you continue to support all of our efforts, and you can do that right now by going to your telephone and inviting family members and friends to tune in to 860 AM. If you live in southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware, where our signal is, if they're outside the area, then invite them to tune in by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com, and right on the left side of the page, we have the link, Listen Live. And as always, we will have a copy of today's rebroadcast up on the internet later this afternoon. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm very pleased to say that we have all of our panel members with us today. One will be silent because he has a little bit of a sore throat again this week, and that is the ever popular Rich Logis. We'll hear from him with a few oohs and ahs once in a while during the broadcast. And of course, in good voice is Mark Andel, the founder of the Made in America store, and Larkin Conley, our national small business advocate. Our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky, and I'm Michael Blihash, always proud to be your host. I did speak with Curtis Ellis, and he is out and about promoting the American First Project, and that is really starting to move very well, and we'll be talking a little bit about that on today's broadcast. And also, I want to bring attention to the fact that if you would like to hear Rich Logis' show, you can go on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on Rich's picture. Also, Mark Andel does a Saturday show, and you can click on his link by going to the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com, and right on the front under the Made in America store logo is the Mark Andel Show Made in America. Also, right under that is the OpenTheBooks.com with our good friend Adam Andrzejewski. I want to tell you, this guy has really brought a lot of attention to what is going on in America, what's been happening as far as over-pensioning people, overpricing things, and this is only the beginning of many, many things that are going to change in the future. As people are starting to eye this thing up, they're saying, like, how did we get to this place? Who allowed all these things to go on and on? Unfortunately, it is the people at the universities who approved all these pensions and high salaries. It is the people in national as well as local offices that approved all of the salaries and the pensions. And now we, the taxpayers, are suffering. I urge you to check out OpenTheBooks.com and see for yourself. You can click on the state where you live and also learn a lot about what's happening in the budget of your state. Well, as we begin the month of April, I'd like to focus as much attention as possible on ways for us to support American workers. As you know, the main mission of our broadcast is to promote more jobs and a positive economy in America. And I think if people were giving out a report card on our effort, I think they would say, this is an effort that deserves an A+. You know, I was always told that working age and able-bodied people should be taught to fish on their own so they can be able to feed themselves and take care of their families, not be given fish so that they'll be there asking for more and more fish, which is, you know, the way many things have been happening in the USA. And why did things change? I don't understand that. I'm going to, first of all, turn to our good panel members. I'm going to ask Mark Andel to give us an update on what is happening with you in your life, on your radio show, and what is also happening in the manufacturing end of things. Mark.
Yeah, how you doing, Mike? Thank you, Rich and Larkin and Henry. Thanks for making us sound good always. Yeah, this is a very exciting time. It's April. We get out of the first quarter. The first quarter is January, February, March. Very tough time of year for most businesses, especially retail, Mike. So we're all fired up. We got a nice plan for the Made in America store and General Welding. Consolidating a little bit, but focusing with laser focus on a lot of areas. So we get excited. We opened our One Niagara Falls location last Friday. That's the location on the second floor in Niagara Falls. And, you know, we get 50% domestic, 50% foreigners to visit Niagara Falls, and they love buying Made in America products because Made in America, the symbol is and product is respected around the world, Mike, and honored around the world. So they love taking back Made in America souvenirs. So that's nice. Get that open. We've got Easter coming up, and we're all excited because here we really start going in the second quarter. Got a lot of neat products. We've had 9,000 products, but we support 500 privately owned American businesses. Again, with the Made in America store, not one product we sell is publicly traded, Story of America, and not one item we have plugs in or takes a battery, and I think that's very sad in the United States of America, and we always joke we can't even make a toaster, but we've been to the moon, Mike. So Made in America is on fire. It's time to start rock and rolling in April. We get excited. We have our big event on Armed Forces Day in May. And we just start, everything's open. Our Naval Park down in our city, we opened up last Friday also. So, you know, when veterans come in to see our Naval Park, and veterans love Made in America more than anybody. You don't have to sell it to them, Mike. They get it. They fought for our country. They served our country. They understand the importance of buying and supporting the country you live in by buying a Made in America product. So a lot going on the Made in America side. On General Welding side, we're very busy. The skilled worker search is always on, and the demand for skilled workers is very strong. I finished my fifth workforce development meeting this year. In first quarter, I covered five school districts, East Aurora, Holland, Olean, Iroquois, and Alden in our area. But last week, I went to Jamestown Community College. I was invited for a tour after our Olean speech, and Jeffrey Tulick and Brent Harkness took me through their facility. Jamestown Community College is in Jamestown, but it's also in Olean. They have a state-of-the-art facility, Mike, teaching welding, pneumatics, hydraulics, electrical, and these teachers were on fire. The whole Olean area, you know, Western New York, this school caters to them. The kids in this school, the kids in the high schools that go to Jamestown Community College after high school are already seated for a job from the ninth grade. So if there's 22 kids graduating, them 22 kids, if they attain, you know, performed or, you know, attended Jamestown Community College, are already placed in local businesses because the demand is so high. And these local businesses invest in this college and gave them state-of-the-art equipment because of the need for these skilled trade workers. And I was amazed to learn, Mike, they have $300,000 put aside at Jamestown Community College waiting to give a young person, 18 to or a 65-year-old, a free ride for 2 years to get a degree in skilled trades, whatever they might choose. And that money's sitting there today, and I couldn't believe they can't give it away. These kids aren't signing up. They didn't find the kids. So I want to announce that. So much I'm learning on this voyage of you know, supporting and leading the charge for skilled trades.
You know, Mark, I agree, and I want to mention we have some very good listeners in Jamestown, New York. I hear from them from time to time, even for our Saturday broadcast. So I'm pleased that you mentioned them. My hats off to the guys and girls from Jamestown, New York. Make sure you go in there and shop at Mark Andel's Made in America store. Mark, what you just brought up is exactly what I've been hearing everywhere I go. The skilled labor shortage is unbelievable. As I mentioned last week and weeks before, we have over 6 million jobs in America right now that are hard to fill because those jobs don't have enough skilled, hands-ready people to come on the job. Some of the people are going now to various institutions like AP Orleans to brush up on some of the subjects they may have heard about, but now they want to do it with an actual hands-on opportunity. What is happening is, what you just said is absolutely a fact. Some of the businesses are going to the schools and saying, can you highlight some of the students that you feel will really follow through in this particular field? Bucks County Community College, those students are already taken up by employers in the 11th grade, and the people already know that they have a job. There are some students that tell me that they have a job before they're halfway through the year to graduate, and that is wonderful. The problem is we need 6 million more skilled people right now, today. You know, this happened in America back in the late 1880s when the Industrial Revolution was taking place. American businesses sent out notices to around the world to send us your best workers. We will train them and they will have a life in America. We are now trying to do this by going to our local schools, and we can't find the people. So this is why our effort to push all of these trades and industrial arts programs and technologies in the schools has really taken off. Many of the school boards are discussing it. They're very discouraged, I must say, because they don't have the money to put the programs back into the schools. The second big thing is, Mark, and I want you to verify if this is what you see as well, they don't have teachers ready and able to enter the classroom in September if they wanted to spend from now till the end of August to restore those classrooms. They have to actually go to the workforce and pull people out of existing jobs and ask them, do you want to teach in our school district? In most cases, they have to take a pay decrease, or they have to keep a part-time job where they were and a part-time job in school, or the employer gets some credits for letting them be in the classroom. It's unbelievable, but I'm really pleased to say that it's happening. Now, Mark, are there enough classrooms in your area offering the trades?
You know, it's funny you say that. If you go to the local schools, a couple of weeks ago I went to Iroquois. I'm on their Business Academy board now, and we meet this week. The principal really gets it, Antonio, and he took me upstairs to show me a room they want to try to set up to have for entrepreneurs and like a think tank room. But, Mike, the sad thing is, and we pay dearly in taxes, he doesn't have certain equipment, so he's trying to get people to donate it, lend it, to build one classroom in this school that it should be nothing for the community and the budget to cover. So it's sad. It's hard. You got believers on these boards. They're really starting skilled trades work issues and shortage has been front page of Buffalo News at least 5 times this year alone. They had a big weld-off for BOCES schools this past Sunday, and all the kids were featured on the front, and the kids that win this weld-off, they go to the national level on a weld-off. So things are happening, Mike, but your answer, no, you know, there's not enough rooms, and the change is on. These things are going to take time, but parents got to get on board, and then they've got to get these school boards to get on board. But I'm finding the teachers and the guidance counselors are actually not the problem, Mike. They believe. They want this. They understand it, but they're driven one way. The one-size-fits-all has taken over not only the children, the parents, but also the teachers and the staff. So you got to get your boards, your education boards and the superintendents of the schools on board here and listen. And I think it's happening, but way too slow, in my opinion.
Much, much slower than expected. And that's a good segue to be saying, please, if you're listening, call your school board, your superintendent. Go to the school meetings and just let them know that you're interested in the trades, because it's scary when you think that 6 million jobs are open and they can't be filled today, mainly because we don't have the people who've had hands-on opportunities. They didn't even have the virtual classroom opportunities. If you remember, Larkin, when we talked about virtual classrooms on this show with Sherman McLeod, And I think that that's has something that has to be done. The kids then would have the opportunity to say, I'd like to do this. Maybe they should have 3 months at this and move to the next, maybe go to some other, go to welding, go to air conditioning. Let them see what they're best suited for. Sitting in the classroom, learning the reading, writing, and arithmetic, that's wonderful. I talk to the students that come to the center to visit the museum, and I ask them all the time, what do you do? Do you have any kind of job fair, mock job fairs, or anything like that? Resume writing. The answer is always N-O. What is going on in the schools? How are the schools preparing the young people to go out the door the day after graduation and go seek a job? They don't even have a resume. Larkin, what do you have to say about this?
Good morning, Michael, and good morning, Mark and Rich. I was going to say something really tantalizing to Rich because I knew he couldn't answer me back, but that's not fair. Hey, listen, the good news is that the U.S. economy has changed. You know, the bad news is we're not ready for the change.
Right.
And people like Mark Andel are living the bad news scene. The manufacturing sector is growing. It's modernizing. It's creating a wealth of challenging, well-paying, high-skilled jobs for those with skills to do them. And we don't have them. The demise of vocational education in at the high school level has bred this shortage in manufacturing today. And the demise, there's a, you know, everything has a reason. The demise is because manufacturing left us high and dry and went to Mexico and went to China and went to Vietnam, and all of our plants were closed. Why would you get a vocational education in Philadelphia 10 years ago? There weren't any jobs.
You're right. Larkin, you are so right. But, you know, it brings us back to our original purpose of our broadcast. How did it happen, and why did the American people, the families of the youngsters who are going into the high schools and into the colleges, allow this to happen? Why didn't they bang the doors down?
I can speak about Philly in that respect, and that's a tremendous lack of the core issue that drives all this. That's the family.
You're right. But here is something I want to tell you, Larkin, and someone has answered this question in a very interesting way. They said, Michael, Mr. Connolly has mentioned that on several occasions, and I do agree with him. Now, this is a teacher, a history teacher in one of our high schools, and they said this, when the students reach my classroom, I demand their attention. They don't leave my classroom rowdied up. We speak, I speak to them, they are part of the classroom. This is what's lacking in most schools, that teachers have those children for those 7 hours a day. They should mold them. What they do in the school can be different as to what is being done in the house and in the neighborhood. I think that's a good point. I enjoyed hearing that.
For several years, I took part in a vocational week in the Philadelphia school system, and I represented entrepreneurship, starting your own business, you know, buying a pickup truck, two lawn mowers, a handful of rakes and brooms, and going out and finding work. And I think every parent in Philadelphia needs to shadow me or whoever's doing it now from SCORE and go into these classrooms. It is deplorable. It's absolutely the worst thing I have ever seen in my life. From an armed Philadelphia policeman dragging a young lady out of the classroom who refused to stop texting on her phone, to a star basketball player at one of the high schools about 2 or 3 years ago, saying that he had no problems because the NBA was virtually waiting for him. So, you know, the demise of vocational education in high schools has, you know, created this shortage. And with it, all of the career opportunities that came with it. We have underemployed college grads. We have unemployed high school grads. We have young Americans who are way, way underemployed. And they don't know, or they don't even know to look. They don't have that guidance to get them to looking for, you know, direct paths to interesting, lucrative careers that pay really, really, really well. You know, many of the jobs in manufacturing are attainable through apprenticeships, on-the-job training. There are vocational programs that are starting to be offered even in community colleges. And they don't require this expensive $400,000 four-year degree.
Yes.
For which students come out of school and to do anything.
Yep.
Except protest. And, you know, first of all, Ms. DeVos, who is the Secretary of Education, needs to put a helmet on and get some boots and get a really big hammer. And she needs to go out and start to pressing the statewide educational institutions and the local boards of education and get them back to understanding that our economy has changed.
Yep.
We're bringing back manufacturing. And the only thing that's holding us up right now, and Mark, you've said it a million times, is the skilled worker.
Yep.
You know, to do the jobs. And
Larkin, want to talk, you know, when I went to Jamestown Community College last week, I met this Jeffrey, the director, and then, the head of the welding technology, Brent, and there was a doctor that had met me during the speech a couple weeks back at Olean that generated all this, because once they seen the movie, and I go, oh, geez, this guy's right in our area. So I come out. But to talk to them and see this beautiful facility, then I was told they don't want to market Jamestown Community College like Alfred states around here. They will market. You'll hear it on the radio. Jamestown Community College, they won't, because the people that invest in them, the local businesses in that area, want the students coming out because there's such a demand and a shortage, right? So it kind of makes sense. They don't want to market. They want to take every student for themselves and save their community and area that the college is in. But when I heard that $300,000 was donated by local businesses that are sitting there for scholarships and a free ride for 2 years, and they can't find students to take it, I want your opinion on this. I was blown away. I'm saying, what do you mean? And he said, no, 2 years. The Jamestown School in Olean gives you a certificate. Then you got to go to the Jamestown School, JCC, in Jamestown to get the degree, but you get a 2-year degree, associate's degree. And there's $300,000 sitting there, and the average it would cost for the 2 years $20,000. So they can give 15 to 20 kids this free ride, and they can't find kids to take it. To me, there's a problem with the parents again, parents, and the schools. If you've got free college waiting in your community for you, why isn't it being taken advantage of? It's
Mark,
crazy. It blew my mind last week.
All three of my children went to Virginia Commonwealth University. I was living in Richmond at the time. And my one son wanted to go to NYU, and he went up and applied. And I saw the nut for NYU for an out-of-state student. And I said to my son, I would love nothing more than to allow you to go to NYU. But I don't have $68,000 a year. I don't have it. I don't have it. I mean, and I'm sorry. I don't even think you can go to New York and get a job and work and go to NYU part-time. I don't think you can make enough money. I just shake my head. Are you serious to charge this kind of money? And kids are coming out of college halfway. Well, they're not even halfway educated. I mean, all you got to do is watch any one of the YouTube programs where they interview people on the street, and they ask them, who's the Vice President of the United States? No clue. who it is. They are so detached from the reality of life in America that it's not funny. It's not even funny. And it's because it's not stressed to them that it's important.
You're absolutely right, Larkin.
My church has got a nice gallery of people. But I was in there last Sunday, and I was sitting in the back row, and I started to look around. And I thought, I've never seen as serious a collection of walkers and canes in my entire life. But my parish, the average age of my parish has got to be 78. There are no new families coming up that are stressing religion. Now, what you do with the religion when you're 18 to 20 years old and you make your own decisions, that's fine. But they're not even being exposed so that they can, in fact, make an intelligent decision. They just aren't. I got into a conversation with a guy across the street, and we were talking, and I said, you know what? I sit at home or I sit in church on Sunday, and I think to myself, boy, do I remember the days, and I remember them vividly. When there wasn't a thing you could do in the city of Pittsburgh on a Sunday, every store was closed. It was a day of worship. It was a day for the family to get together and be together for the entire day. It doesn't exist anymore. The stores are all open on Sunday. I don't know. We have managed to put ourselves in a position that's going to be really, really, really tough to recover from, I think. And I applaud Mark, and I'll do anything to help him to continue to promote the cause. And I only hope that the recent flurry of programs that we're seeing, I'm telling you, the high schools around me in St. Augustine, boom, bang. I mean, they got CTEs all over the place. Mm. Matter of fact, I talked to one guy who's on the Board of Education in St. John's County, and he said, you need to go down to Menendez High School, and you need to talk to the people down there and what they're bringing back, plumbing, carpentry, welding. It's just amazing. And they're arranging programs where the kids get to work in the afternoon for some professional or public private company that, you know, just serve an apprenticeship so that they can learn on-the-job training as well as the vocational programs. And I don't know. It's
Larkin, what you're hearing is what we're hearing all over, too. The unfortunate part of what we are suffering from is the aftermath of people in state governments, national elected officials, all not taking a look at what's happening to our America's economy. They watched all those jobs going to foreign countries. So it became necessary for government, which represents our tax dollars, to put in all these programs to hide the fact that we didn't have enough jobs. And now here we are 30 years later, and we now have to reinvent the wheel, a wheel we should have never allowed to stop spinning in this country. When they are telling me now in the outside the Philadelphia area and some in Philadelphia, where they are retooling the schools for some of these special trade programs, I'm amazed. In Philadelphia for a long time, the most important place you could get trained for the trades was through the unions. Now that things have changed and the people see there's just not enough people coming out from the unions, and there's not enough jobs to the unions, there's not enough people coming out of the schools, they're rethinking it. But can you imagine these people all dressed up in suits, have nothing to do but sit around the legislatures and not even consider what is happening in our country, our education? What do we need? Are we going to export the entire manufacturing industry of America out? Well, they didn't care. because they were getting paid, they were having their health care taken care of, they really didn't care. And here we are today trying to address the real issues, issues that should have never happened to us, but poor leadership made it happen and it allowed it to happen. Secondly, the national news media screwed the people of this country by not focusing on the things that were important to the people in America. They focused on garbage. 90% of what they talked about, from what I have heard in the last 20 years, has been nothing but idioticness. This one's no good. This one's getting all this money. This one's divorcing this one. This one's marrying this one. Who cares? What about the bread and butter issues? The issues that'll keep your advertisers advertising on your programs. The issues that'll keep the people employed in their communities, make the infrastructure of America beautiful again. I just spoke to a few tourists and I asked them if they wanted to come and live in America. They said, no, we have too many opportunities in the European Union. And there are many jobs. We are trained from our middle schools for every level of jobs. Every person gets out of the school with some degree, some background where they could be employed. Is that happening in America, Larkin?
No. And you know, it's true, Michael. All of the earnings studies show that college graduates earn more over a lifetime than high school graduates. It's true. And that studies up until and including 2014, 2015. They all show that. But where they are at fault now and what they're not considering, the weaknesses in their mumbo-jumbo studies, is that over 50%, it's actually 53% of recent college graduates are unemployed or underemployed.
Underemployed, that's right.
Over half. That is a fact. They also, when they do these studies, they take into consideration college graduates versus all high school graduates. And that's not a fair study. Study the ones that go in to vocational education and learn a skill. Then you're comparing apples to apples. But the final one, to me, and the fatal one, is that we have developed this unmerciful commercial attitude that puts money above all else.
Yep, Larkin, you're dead on. When I talk to these people from Jamestown, JCC College, that's what they said. It's all the money market. And if you think about $300,000 being sitting there, not used in scholarships and free rides, because of what they're selling, they don't want the kids to go that direction. They want them to go the other direction because everybody's in the cahoots.
Yep. And Mark, you'll understand this better than anybody. What they miss in this money-grabbing scheme, you know, you graduate from college, you're going to get a job on Wall Street. What they miss in this money-making scheme is the unbelievable sense of accomplishment that yeah. one gets from working with their hands, either as the owner of the company or as the owner of what they created with the welding gun or with, you know, as opposed to a college graduate who wears a tie every day to work, and he is prey to what his boss thinks and feels. And when the boss at the top changes, all of a sudden a new regime comes in, and you're gone for no good reason, or you're demoted. The stress in corporate America is at a level that is hard for anybody to believe. Unbelievable stress. It's been a long time since I've seen a stressed out welder, or it's a long time since I've seen my brother who flips houses and works with his hands and has nine guys working with him. I've never seen him stressed out. He's to me the most personally satisfied person that I know with who he is and what he does. And it allowed him to spend a lifetime in the world of rugby. And he played it all over the world. All even New Zealand, Australia, all over Europe.
Did you say
traveled.
Rugby?
Rugby. Rugby.
Tough.
My brother is a preeminent rugby American.
Wow.
I was sitting in a bar in Las Vegas coming away from a trade show, and I was sitting there talking to guys watching a football game waiting for my plane. It was a Sunday. The trade show had just ended. And I'm sitting there, and I got to talking to the guy sitting next to me. And he said, why are you in Vegas? And I said, well, it was a national convenience store show. And he goes, oh. And I said, why were you here? Same thing. And he goes, no. I said I was here for the American Association of Rugby Clubs. And I said, oh, my brother plays rugby. He said, oh, does he? I mean, is he serious? And I said, yeah, I'm going to have to say my brother's pretty serious about his rugby. And we got to talking, and he said, well, where's your brother from? And I said, Pittsburgh. And he went, you're kidding. Did you just tell me her last name was Conley? And I said, yeah. And he said, is your brother Mark Conley? This guy was from, like, Salt Lake City. And it made me so proud that somebody could do the kind of work that he does, teaching rugby in high school as a volunteer. And they built a million-dollar pitch in Pittsburgh that the NCAA 4A rugby championships are held there every year. St. Louis and Pittsburgh are the two rugby capitals of the country. And my brother and about three of his friends are the ones that put rugby on the map. And I'm telling you now, if my brother was working for some corporation, that would have never what might have happened, but it wouldn't have involved him. My brother's had a wonderful, wonderful life, and he's worked with his hands since the day he walked out of the University of Dayton and said, this is not for me.
Well, see, Larkin, that's a good point, and your brother's a good example. How do we get back to the way of showing boys and girls what is available in the various industries? I mean, you're a hands-on person, whether you're a doctor or an accountant or whatever. We're all working with our hands in some way. The fact is, not everybody wants to be a lawyer or an accountant or a doctor, but they like to do other things with their hands, fixing things and inventing things. How do we bring that back into the school
system?
And
Mike, I think it's, you know, what I've been talking about with all these board meetings, and it's got to happen in 6th, 7th, 8th grade. They got to be exposed with it. They got to be allowed to make a choice and a decision. You know, we got to give these kids another purpose other than this one size fits all that's driven for money or whatnot for the system. And it comes down to parents, parents, and parents have to keep pushing with the education boards and change these school systems in your public and private schools. Like I had from kindergarten to 12th grade, I could get, it was mandated. I took wood shop and metal shop and then electronics, electrical, all in my high school. So at least you got exposed at younger ages. Remember, they wiped that out. They might have a tech class, but otherwise there is no classrooms to get exposed to this and to even know that you might be interested in it.
Mark, when did they pull out the wood shop?
Yeah, I graduated 84. It started to happen before 90. It was gone, I believe. I remember my shop teacher, I didn't know at the time, he had petitions going, we've got to keep the metal shops, wood shops. Ralph Cheney from this West New York area, hats off to him, because he knew before we did this was going to be a problem.
Now, all his petitions and all, where did they go?
You know, he'd come around, he pushed it hard, but nobody was, they were still removing these shops as he was doing the driving for it. And hats off, because I didn't know at the time how important that was. He was right, because even if you're going to become a doctor, you should be able to work a screwdriver or a hammer and at least know something about it, even if it's robotics, CAD. There's so much to it. I talk about welding a lot. The wood shops, there's so many avenues to go. In welding alone, you can be a welding engineer, a CWI, certified welding inspector. You could be a programmer. You could be a repairer, you know, welding repair. There's so many phases to go in each, if it's robotics, if it's electrical, if it's pneumatics, hydraulics, CAD. There's so many areas that aren't discussed and exposed. At a younger age, I believe it has to happen, 6th, 7th, 8th, to get them to know, hey, that might be interesting, and then to allow them to choose their path.
Mark, I think we're giving an education today to the people. How could this have happened to us in the last 29 years?
Yeah, you see,
where most of what we were able to put our young people in various jobs, in industries. And by the way, if somebody at least learns something special in school, they can then decide, well, maybe I want to go to work someplace. Maybe I want to be on the business level. Maybe I want to open up my own business. Many, many businesses are overwhelmed with work from people in their homes, in their air conditioning units and everything else. We just don't have enough of those type of people either. But do we have young people in colleges that are in debt up to their ears? Yes. Do they have skills that they're ready to offer some industry or go into business themselves? No. How did this happen? What are we going to do about it and continue to do about it? We've been doing our part. It's now the people who are listening and all the parents and guardians and grandparents, whatever you call yourself and your family, speak up, because it's now or never.
You know, and I think this needs to be stressed, because some of the arguments that I hear are that, you know, when a kid goes to high school and takes shop classes, he comes out and he knows how to make a birdhouse, but he hasn't learned anything else. And that's really, really not the slightest bit true in a really, really good school district. First of all, Michael, I want you to harken back to the mid-60s when I was in grade school. That's when I took shop. We actually walked 2 miles to the high school, to the grade school, the public Pittsburgh Public Grade School, and we took shop. And we learned, we took a woodworking shop, and we took drafting. We learned how to draft, how to lay out a house, how to lay out a floor. It was terribly unique. But, you know, the theory that students should follow separate educational tracks according to their ability, that's what kind of started to emerge back then. But they deserted shop. The idea is that if you're college-bound, you take academic courses like Latin and creative writing and science and biology and math, and you receive no vocational training. But there are those students, and this is the way it should be, not headed for college, who would take basic academic courses so they learn their reading, writing, and arithmetic, along with vocational training or shop. It's not Mark's plea. It's not Sherman McLeod's plea that we graduate people that know nothing but welding. We want them to have that well-rounded basic education that teaches them the three R's, but also teaches them to work with their hands.
Larkin, I want to say this to you.
If you want to graduate and work with your hands, you don't need trigonometry. You're going to need to how to read a tape rule, and you're going to need to how to add and subtract and multiply. But I'm risking that unless you graduated and became a math teacher, you're never going to use trigonometry.
Absolutely. You know, Larkin, one of the things I have to tell you about a particular company in Northeast Philadelphia told me that out of 100 people interviewed, they may find 6 or 7 that are qualified to be on the job, mainly because the young people can't read a ruler. They don't know how to input the proper stuff into the computer. They're very computer literate, and they are great on their phones. But when it comes time to knowing the real issues as to how they're supposed to measure things out and make a proposal, no idea how to follow through. The biggest problems that employers are having is this. They bring someone in, and Mark, you can let me know if this has happened to you. You bring someone in who's never done that type of a job. They want to get into the training program. They're 20 years old and say, well, maybe I'll give this a try. They go into a program to learn. They're paid a basic salary to be there for like a 6-week training program. The 7th week, they put in the notice that they're not going to return. It's not what they thought it was going to be, and they leave. So all that money and time for the employer is wasted. I've said that a few times in the past, but this is something that people tell me. How can I be paying people to be on the job after they're on the training program, leave me high and dry, and I have to start all over again? And that's why we're talking and begging the people in the schools to reinstitute all of the programs, not some, all of them. There was a teacher who made a very good suggestion, Larkin. I just don't know how to do it. They said that, Michael, being within the school system, nothing will happen unless it's really pushed on the election ballot by the voters. The school boards can meet. They'll talk and they'll say, oh, we don't have enough money. We have pensions to take care of. We have leaky roofs to fix and all this and that. It has to be done by the voters. So I'm thinking that in the future, we have to promote putting it on the referendum so that the parents, grandparents, and new voters can go out there and show their support for restoring the trades and technologies in the schools. What do you think of that?
Certainly, Michael, you remember the days in the 2000s, after 2000, maybe even in the 90s. Essentially, the Board of Education in Philadelphia was neutered. They had no authority, no power. We were firing the chairman of the board or whatever they call the head guy. And the board members were all elected, and they were all professional politicians. That's not where the solution lies. Clearly, that is not where the solution lies. So, until we get parents involved, both in the school board and in the subcommittees of the school boards, and until we get parents willing enough to go to a city council meeting, I still tell the story down here, and they belly laugh in Florida because we don't even have a full-time legislature. But I said, listen, Philadelphia's got, I don't know, 1.5 million, 2 million. I don't know how many people are up there, but I can tell you right now that they have a full-time city council. Full-time city council. How many cities have full-time city councils? Not a lot of them. Full-time city council. They're paid well over $100,000 for this full-time job, and it takes 18 city council members to be elected in the city to run the city. And of all of the American cities, they're the most broke. They have no pensions. They're a one-party town. It's a mess. And in Philadelphia, the citizens have to take over. Somebody has to raise their window and yell out, I'm sick and tired of this. I'm sick and tired of all of this bourgeois and the drop program. I explained that to one guy the other day, and he said, that's illegal. And I said, well, tell that to the city of Philadelphia. These guys resign from their job, take the one-time payment, and then jump back on the payroll and go back to their salary. And they take that one drop payment of anywhere from $200,000 to $400,000. The politicians have raped the city. They have raped it.
And it's happened all over, Larkin. It's unbelievable. The people have not had the opportunity. If I had something on the ballot, a referendum, they have referendums to fix streets and fix this and that, and you agree to it, and we take bonds and things like that. Why not a referendum to take bonds to restore the trades in our schools and make it available to at least 50% of all the students in our schools?
I would ask you to Google Detroit, Michigan, and read the latest three articles from anywhere. I don't care, although I don't trust the Times as far as I can birdcage it. But read the last three articles on the change in Detroit. They elected the right mayor, the correct mayor. And Detroit is in the midst of a very serious renaissance. And, you know, it can happen. It just can't happen when it's raining bad stuff from the top spot.
Yes, when your mind is set just to appease people, just to fill time. I'm glad that we had the opportunity, and I thank the people who are tuned in, and I ask that you speak up. This weekend is the first weekend of April, and of course it's National Small Business Weekend, an event that we created during this particular broadcast. And a lot of people have picked it up. Some people have changed it. They call it Friday and Saturday Out or whatever. It all reflects the same idea. And it's getting people to come out and do things the first weekend of the month. The biggest problem that some of the promoters tell me is that because they have so many foreign-made items in their stores promoting the American-made movement, often people put up their eyebrows and say, yeah, well, where's your American-made stuff? Hopefully they are trying to go along with our message and seek out more American-made products.
Can I change the subject real quickly? I am genuinely frightened. I really mean that. More than 100,000 illegal immigrants are poised to cross the U.S. border into Texas in the month of April. That's the biggest monthly total in more than a decade. In a decade. And we're still standing around in Washington and arguing about whether we should have a wall or not. And the Democrats have no fix.
You know, Larkin, you're right. And, you know, this is something that has to be addressed. Most of the people that I speak to tell me that the men, women, and children should remain in their own countries until they're legally approved to come here to the United States of America, just the way your families and my family came to this country legally. Just barging in anywhere is against our law. You know, our grandparents and parents came to this country. I don't understand what kind of mentality this is. I agree we should stop all aid to countries that are disrespecting our laws, period. Something that we have to speak up about as the taxpayers. Anybody comes to the country, they should already have some sort of income, be able to go to a particular job. None of that is possible right now. They're just coming in, as I said earlier today. We have 4 million people graduating in just 6 weeks from high schools and colleges. They deserve the opportunity to have a job in America first. And whatever we have to do to make sure that happens, we have to do it. I don't care if it's Republicans, Democrats, Independents, Moon people. We have to stick up for our own first so that our people are able to live the American dream first. Yes, Lark.
Here's the point I would make. I mean, the first and most important point, political though it be, is the Democrats need to help fix this border situation, this border crisis as it is right now, or they need to get the hell out of Trump's way. That's the net bottom line, and let him fix this. Between a wall and all of the other proposals he's made, listen, this is Logos's thought. I'm only stealing his thought, but it's so very true. If the wall in today's political atmosphere, if the wall wouldn't work, don't you think the Democrats would love to see Trump build it and fall on his face? The Democrats know as well as anybody else does that walls work. They work. And it's not the nature of our country to... Oh, the nature of our country is we better do something if we want to survive.
Yeah.
Because as you said, Michael, they get across the borders, they go to Philadelphia, and they sit down and go, try to cuff me. You can't
Larkin,
touch
who's
me.
Paying for all that? Us taxpayers, right?
Yeah. Yep.
That's right. That's right. You know, Larkin, by the way, we have a lot of barriers in the United States. Just drive down some certain highways and you'll see they are sound barriers, barriers to protect the communities. That's all we're looking for, is to make the barriers, put them up there so that when people come, they enter through the door where we are saying this is the welcome center. Not just to run over 2-3 o'clock in the morning and we're here and you get mixed in the southern cities. No, it shouldn't be like this. We should have done this 30 years ago. This should have been all finalized. We should have had a wall as soon as we knew that a wall would protect the American people.
So,
we always want to welcome immigrants. Absolutely.
Sure,
no question about it.
We have to. We have to have immigrants. They're the backbone of growth in this country. I would suggest to everybody, go Google Nancy Pelosi's house. Just put Nancy Pelosi's house in there.
Does she have doors?
She has the biggest wall. She has the biggest wall you've ever seen in your life around her house.
And Larkin, and so can you get the picture of that and email it to me? I'd like to post that.
Okay. I will try to find that. I will do that.
I want to see that.
And Joe Biden has a wall around his house. And just as an aside, could the press get off of Joe Biden's case, please? You're making a mountain out of nothing. Leave Joe Biden alone.
Let him be the candidate if he gets to there. Absolutely, yep. I agree. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as you can see by the clock on the wall, it is time for us to say goodbye for today. Until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11, right here on 860 AM, I wish you and yours the best. You can hear a rebroadcast of today's show simply by going to the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Anytime link. Thanks, guys. Best wishes to you, Rich. Thank you, Larkin and Mark and Henry. And talk to you all soon.
All right. Have a great week, guys. Bye, mate.
Have a great week, everybody.